have entered Ghost Town. I hope this finds you well.
We'll be right back. walking on the ground, I didn't make a sound. Then I turned around and I saw a clown, had a frown, stood on a mound, started barking like a hound. When I came to it, I found he showed me something that was brown. So we became great friends, and late in life, he got sick. I gave him some soup, but he got worse. It asked for its purse. It got it, but it was empty, so it cried aplenty. I wondered what to do. I didn't know what to think, so I got a drink. And then I showed it something that was round. Then it died, smiled, and fell on the ground. About those days with the clown, I get teary-eyed and really snide. I think that deep down, I hated that clown, but not as much as Mr. Farr. I'm gonna go smoke a cigar. Sound, and then I turned around, I saw a clown, clown, clowny clown, clown. I hate you, clown, with your ugly frown, smiley lips. I think I'll clip you across the nose, clown. With this cigar, it'll get you real far. Like Mr. Farr, get it? Mr. Farr? Clown. Clown. See what a cigar will do? Clown. Ugly clown.
Thank you. It's time for your favorite part of the show.
You mean it's time to go already?
No, I mean it's time to get down and get funky, sort of. Sandwich and a pizza, roast beef sandwich and a pizza, roast beef sandwich and a pizza. All the fellas and the chicks getting calories and kicks, eating roast beef sandwich and a pizza. Chomping to the music of the jukebox. Anybody got another dime? Chomping to the music of the jukebox, 'cause we're having such a wonderful time. Just eating roast beef sandwich and a pizza.
Chip, 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 chip. Come on. Chip, 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 chip. Come on. Chip, 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 chip. Come on. Serenade to a poodle. Chip, 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 chip. Come on. Chip, 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 chip. Come on. Chip, 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 chip. Come on. Serenade to a poodle. Come on. Chip, 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 chip. Come on. Chip, 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 chip. Come on. Serenade to a poodle. chip, 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 chip. Come on. Chip, 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 chip. Come on. Come on, chip on. Chip, chip, chip. Come on. Serenade to a poodle. Come on. Chip, 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 chip. Come on. Come on, Bobo. Chip, 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 chip. Come on. Serenade to a poodle.
Номер понес психомасисты, ты кроля спири за ферга.
Ela, ela, sa mumini si ser Thank you. I knew Gerard Fetz as well as anyone could know him when he lived at Debenham. He was a drunken old Scotchman. As I say, I knew him as well as anyone could know him. And I'm probably the only man alive who can tell you the following foul and unnatural events in his life that made him the useless drunkard he is today. In his young days, Fett studied medicine in the schools of Edinburgh. It wasn't long before a Mr. Kramer, teacher of anatomy, singled him out and gave him a job. He had, among other minor duties, the delicate position of having to supply, receive, and divide the various subjects. In view of this, he lodged in the same building with the dissecting rooms. Here, he would be called out of bed in the black hours before the winter dawn by the unclean and desperate interlopers who supplied the table. The supply of dead bodies was a continual trouble to him, as well as to his master. In that large and busy class, the raw material of the anatomists kept perpetually running out. One morning, early, Fetz was called to the door, where two Irishmen stripped the sacking from their sad merchandise and demanded their money. He stared at the body and then said, "What? Well, this is Jane Galbraith." The man answered nothing, but shuffled nearer the door.
I know her, I tell you. She was alive and hearty yesterday. It's impossible she could be dead. It's impossible you could have come by this body fairly.
Oh, sure, sir. You're mistaken entirely, said one of the men.
The other looked Fetz darkly in the eyes and demanded the money on the spot. It was impossible to misconceive the threat or to exaggerate the danger. The lad's heart failed him. He stammered some excuses, counted out the sum, and saw his visitors depart. With horror, he waited for his immediate superior, the class assistant. This was Wolfe McFarlane, a high favorite among the reckless students, clever, dissipated, and unscrupulous to the last degree. On this particular morning, McFarlane arrived somewhat earlier than usual. Fetz told him his story and showed him the cause of his alarm. McFarlane examined the body of Jane Galbraith and said,
"Well, yes. Yes, it does look fishy."
"Well, what should I do?"
"Do? Do you want to do anything? Least said, soonest mended, I should say."
"But someone else might recognize her. She's as well known as the Castle Rock."
"Well, we'll hope not. And if anybody does recognize her, well, you didn't, don't you see? And there's an end. The fact is, this has been going on too long. You stir up mud and you'll get Kramer into the most unholy trouble. You'll be in a shocking box yourself, and so will I, if you come to that. For me, you know, there's one thing certain. There's, practically speaking, all our subjects have been murdered."
"McFarlane!
Oh, come now! As if you didn't suspect it yourself."
"Suspecting is one thing,
and proof is another? Yes, I know. And I'm as sorry as you are this body should have to come here. The next best thing for me to do is not to recognize it, and I don't. You may, if you please. I don't dictate. But I think a man of the world would do as I do, and I may add, I fancy that is what Kramer looks for at our hands. Question is, why did he choose us for his assistants? And I answer, because he didn't want old wives."
Well, this was the tone of all others to affect the mind of a lad like Fetz. He agreed to imitate McFarlane. The body of the unfortunate girl was duly dissected, and no one appeared to recognize her. At 4 in the next morning, Fetz was awakened by the well-known signal. Descending to the door, he was filled with astonishment to find McFarlane with his gig, and in the gig, one of those long and ghastly packages with which he was so well acquainted. When they got the body upstairs and laid it on the table, Fetz looked at the face and was staggered. He looked from McFarlane to the body and then back again. The face was that of a Howard Gray, a particular enemy of McFarlane. Unprepared for a challenge so momentous, he knew not how to look his comrade in the face. It was McFarlane himself who made the first advance. He said,
You must pay me. Your accounts, you see, must tally."
"Pay you? Pay you for that?"
"Why, yes, of course you must. By all means and on every possible account you must. I dare not give it to you for nothing. You dare not take it for nothing. It would compromise us both. This is another case like Jane Galbraith's. The more things are wrong, the more we must act as if they were all right. Now, come, give me the money."
Fetz did so, but as if he were in a daze. Finally, the transaction complete, he found voice again.
"McFarlane, I have put my neck in a halter to oblige you."
"To oblige me? Oh, come now. You did as near as I can see the matter what you downright had to do in self-defense. Suppose I got into trouble, where would you be? This second little matter flows clearly from the first. Mr. Gray is a continuation of Miss Galbraith. You can't begin and then stop. If you begin, you must keep on beginning. That's the truth. No rest for the wicked, you know. You're staggered at first. But look at Kramer, my dear fellow. You're clever. You have pluck. I like you, and Kramer likes you. You were born to lead the hunt. And I tell you on my honor and my experience in life, 3 days from now, you'll laugh at all these scarecrows like a high school boy at a farce.
Before the week was out, McFarlane's prophecy had been fulfilled. Fetz began to plume himself upon his courage and had so arranged the story in his mind that he could look back at these events with an unhealthy pride. At length, an occasion arose when Mr. Kramer was again short of subjects. Pupils were eager, and it was part of this teacher's pretensions always to be well supplied. At the same time, there came news of a burial of a farmer's wife in the country graveyard of Glencourse. Mr. Kramer assigned Fetz and McFarlane to snatch the woman's body from the grave. Late one stormy afternoon, the pair set forth well wrapped in cloaks and furnished with a jug of liquor. It rained without remission, a cold, dense, lashing rain. Bottle and all, it was a rather sad and silent drive. It was night by the time they arrived at the cemetery, and it was still raining. But Fetz was considerably improved in spirit by the help of the bottle. And as they turned in the front gate, he boasted, "Ha! The great thing, McFarlane, is not to be afraid. Now, between you and me, I don't want to brag, but hell, devil, right, wrong, sin, crime, and all the old gallery of curiosities, they may frighten boys. But men of the world like you and me despise them. Here's to the memory of Howard Gray." The work was hard. But before long, they reached the coffin, at which time McFarlane broke the little gig lamp that they had propped up for light by throwing out a rock. They were so nearly done that they judged it wisest to complete their work in the dark. The coffin was exhumed and broken open, the body inserted in a dripping sack and carried between them to the gig. They had both been wetted to the skin during their operations, and now, as the gig jumped along the deep ruts, the thing that stood propped between them fell now upon one and now upon the other. A creeping chill began to possess the soul of Fetz. He peered at the bundle, and it seemed somehow larger than at first. It grew and grew upon his mind that some unnatural miracle had been accomplished, that some nameless change had befallen the dead body. Finally, making a great effort to arrive at speech, he said, "For God's sakes, let's have a light." McFarlane was agreeable, and they lit with difficulty the remaining gig lamp, which shed a wide circle of misty brightness around the gig. It became possible for the two young men to see each other and the thing they had along with them. The rain had molded the round sacking to the outlines of the body underneath. The head was distinct from the trunk, the shoulders plainly modeled. Something at once spectral and human riveted their eyes upon the ghastly comrade of their drive. McFarlane said, "This isn't a woman."
"It was a woman when we put her in."
"Hold that lamp. I must see her face."
And as Fetz took the lamp, his companion untied the fastenings of the sack and drew the cover from his head.
With a wild yell, each leaped from his own side into the roadway. The lamp fell, broke, and the horse bounded and went off toward Edinburgh at a gallop, bearing along with it the sole occupant of the gig, the body of the dead and long dissected Howard Gray.
Thank you.
You are now leaving Ghost Town. Good night.